Good day, global citizens. Welcome to another episode of Dr. Fajembola's Opinion and the first episode on publications. I'm so elated to bring you learned colleagues who have published across different fields in health. Our first guest researcher is a good colleague of mine. We've published together once, and he's someone I learned from. Please join me to welcome pharmacist Yusuf Adebisi, pharmacist doctor Yusuf. Pharmacist doctor Yusuf Adebisi.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be with you this afternoon.
Thank you so much, pharmacist doctor Yusuf Adebisi. I'm so glad to have you on board. How are you and how are you feeling today?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. We're enjoying the summer. It's really hot as I'm speaking. I think we're about 25 or 27 degree in the UK.
Effects of the climate change on us. Okay, let me give you a summary of Dr. Adebisi bio. Dr. Yusuf Adebisi is a pharmacist, epidemiologist. He completed his pharmacy training at the University of Ibadan in Nigeria and earned his MSc in Global Health Science and Epidemiology from the University of Oxford, supported by a fully funded Commonwealth Shared Scholarship. He's currently a fully funded PhD at the University of Glasgow on a UK Research and Innovation ESRC PhD Scholarship. He has published over 200 papers in peer-reviewed journals. This is what Nigerians call if he is a runner. To me, this is legendary, and so we are learning from a scholar today. Our discussion today is focused on COVID-19. When the pandemic started, for me personally, when the pandemic started, it made me appreciate what I was taught in medical school on coronavirus. We were taught many viruses. So I was like, oh, this is what they were talking about. The beautiful thing about medicine is seeing what you read in the book, in clinics, or maybe in pandemics, in communities. 3 months, like 3 months after I graduated, that's when the pandemic started. And coronavirus was declared a public health emergency of international concern by the World Health Organization. So it's affecting like 20 other countries, Nigeria included, and me being in Nigeria and not being affected by the coronavirus, even if we're taking other precautionary measures not to get infected, even though some people were infected, we had low morbidity and mortality compared to most countries in the global north. So when I got to countries like Thailand, and currently I'm in US, I've been infected and I've received series of vaccinations. And aside the fact of having the knowledge of, okay, this is a pandemic, I have the microbiology. I also bring some pharmacology, appreciation of the vaccines, appreciation of management measures in treating coronavirus disease. Personally, I had the Moderna vaccine, and I know some people don't believe in coronavirus and they never had the vaccines, especially in the global north with so much information going around. So on to today, the publication we are looking at is your letter to the editor, which was published under Tropical Medicine in 2021, like a year after the pandemic started, on the use of antibiotics in, I say antibiotics, some people say antibiotics, whatever works for you, on the use of antibiotics in COVID-19 management, a rapid review of national treatment guidelines in 10 African countries. Dr. Adebisi, this is an interesting research because COVID-19 came like an accident on a collapsing bridge, which had other accidents, not just in the global south, like countries like Nigeria and other African countries, but also in the global north. Like, it came like a shock. This is the first pandemic actually I have experienced. I'm sure also for you, you've experienced in our generation. Please, can you give us an overview of this publication from an author's perspective?
Thank you very much for having me. It's also always an honor to share more insights on my work. For this particular research, as we all know, for COVID, COVID is a viral infection and there's no need for antibiotics because antibiotics are not effective against viral infection. But during the COVID-19 pandemic, everyone is trying to experiment. We are trying to look for way out. We are trying to look for the best way to actually respond to the pandemic in terms of treatment options and what we can actually use. And it's during COVID-19 pandemic that we have people trying to repurpose different medication, different drugs for the treatment of COVID. So, but fundamentally, we all know that it is not effective. Antibiotics cannot work for viral infection. And that's the odds during the COVID-19 pandemic. So what inspired us to do that particular research is to see what countries are actually doing, because we know antibiotics are precious. They should not be misused. They should be used judiciously and religiously as much as possible. But there's no research at that time to see what countries are actually doing regarding the use of antibiotics. So we conducted that study just to assess the national treatment guideline across 10 African countries to see, you know, treatment guidelines, what they actually follow at the national level and locally across countries. So we read through all the national treatment guidelines of the 10 African countries to see what they say about the use of antibiotics. And the thing is, we know some people are on ventilators. That means that they are likely or they are prone to having infection. And the major problem here is that there's a possibility of superimposition of viral infection and bacterial infection at the same time. But we have some countries that, of course, you just put it in the guideline that, oh, you can use antibiotics, but they did not actually specify the condition and when we should use antibiotics. So our research basically is to uncover that. And we see quite a number of countries where antibiotics is actually recommended for minor or mild or mild or cases where antibiotics are not actually indicated. So what that tells us basically is that during pandemic, nobody envisaged what is going to happen. We don't really predict it's coming. So everyone is trying to respond as much as possible. And the use of antibiotics is something that we really want to protect. And we have been doing a lot of work before the pandemic to promote antibiotic stewardship. But the shock from the pandemic and the need for countries to actually respond, we see some countries where they actually recommend antibiotics for the treatment of COVID, which that should not be, unless if there is a confirmed case of bacteria infection that is superimposed with the viral condition like COVID.
Okay, thank you so much, Dr. Abiyebi. That was quite extensive, and that was beyond my understanding of the publication when I went through it. Thank you so much for that. I want to know, in the publication, in the paper, countries were selected randomly. There was no criteria for selection of these 10 African countries. Personally, how many have you visited? And in total, outside the countries that were chosen, how many African countries have you visited?
Well, probably I've not counted it properly, but but for this research, basically, because it's just a review, what we need is to get the policy documents downloaded online. They are open access to review. But in terms of African countries, I've been to Kenya, I've been to Rwanda, I've been to Kenya, Rwanda, Ethiopia, I've been to, of course, Nigeria. where again? I've been to a number of countries and I forgot. I've been to Sierra Leone. I've been to country again. I've been to a number of countries in Africa.
It's fine. Do you believe as an author in this paper, do your travel experience does it have an effect on the curation of publications, not just this paper, general curation of your publications? If it does, at what rate do you think, what is the percentage it has an effect?
Of course, African countries generally are diverse, but at the same time, we have similar or same way of living. So that understanding of the African context has actually shaped, of course, the reason and why we actually want to do the research in the first place. Because, for instance, we already know that we have limited diagnostic ability in terms of the facility that is available to even diagnose or to even screen or even do some culture for microbiological culture. We know we have that major issues in many African countries where they can actually do appropriate culture to know whether antibiotics is indicated or not. So that understanding is actually what inspires us to even do that research, to see in these countries what are they doing to respond to the pandemic, and how are they using antibiotics, because we already have a very good understanding of limited microbiological facility to even do some culture to know whether antibiotics should be given or not. So we have that understanding, and that shape the reason why we actually do this particular work. And I would say, in addition to all that thinking and the way we structure the article, that understanding of the local reality and the local context shaped at least close to 100% of our work, of course.
Okay, thank you so much. It's so great to see that the travel experience has an effect on publications, and to also encourage people who want to go into, people who are not interested in traveling, at least give them some reason to travel more and to make more impact. I would like to know your COVID-19 experience, Dr. Adebisi. What vaccine did you receive, which country, and also your experience on COVID-19 from 2020 till date?
Well, for me, regarding the vaccination, I received the Moderna vaccine, the first, the second vaccine, which is actually, I mean, there are a lot of misconception during the COVID-19 pandemic on whether people should take the vaccine or not. But the thing is, it has actually tested science, in the sense that we now understand that many people that don't have a very good understanding of science during the pandemic were shocked with what is actually happening. Because if you look at science, we are always evolving when it comes to knowledge. There's no fixed knowledge. So some people think, probably because this thing is new, people are trying to understand it more. We are trying to understand how best to respond. And things are actually changing. So people think, oh, they are trying to mislead us, or they are trying to do this, they are trying to do that to confuse us, or to all sorts of misconception. You know, you are aware of that. So all I think is that it shows that we have low science literacy globally. Many people have that little understanding of science, what science is all about, because science is always changing, and we need to actually understand that. It's not that it's changing, it's just that what we understand at a particular point in time is going to evolve. Because at the beginning, we have some people saying, okay, this thing is airborne. Some people are saying, oh no, the COVID is not COVID-19, the virus is not airborne. So we have a lot of debate, a lot of discussion, but that's how science works. That's how we are able to come up with new knowledge and insight on how we can actually improve our practice, improve policy, and get better at what we do. So that's one key thing that I would say. And for me, the experience, basically, I've never had COVID at all.
Never tested.
I tested when I was traveling. I think when I went to Sierra Leone, when I went to the Gambia, in the later part of the pandemic, I had to test. So, but I cannot say I didn't caught COVID at all, because probably, maybe, you know, I get well easily, because I do sometimes when I have some kind of headache, but I was okay within a few days after. So probably that's COVID, but I didn't officially have any clinical diagnosis that I indeed I have COVID. So, but my experience is just that I'm able to see how science actually worked more and see that we have a lot of misconception around regarding what science is and how we actually generate evidence. Yeah, that's just a brief overview. Of course, in other areas, it's actually a big hit in terms of the impacts. I also have graduated from pharmacy school, so that was delayed. But of course, here we are today.
Okay. All thanks to God. It's beautiful to hear your perspective, actually. It's breathtaking to hear your perspective. We had Ebola in the past and even most recently in East and Central Africa.
Yes.
What is your advice on antibiotics used as a single or synergistic disease management in future pandemics, especially in Africa?
I think presently what we need to start doing now is to strengthen our response to the microbiological culture or aspects of knowing whether antibiotics is indicated or not in conditions. Ebola is also a viral condition where normally we standard there's no need for antibiotics.
Yes.
So we know that. So, but of course, when we have condition, where we have issue, or we have instances where everyone is trying to rush to respond, there's no time. So people try to do all sorts of things. So I just think right now, what we need to focus on is to ability to strengthen our antimicrobial stewardship as much as possible to make sure that we have a national action plan. And make sure that we follow the National Action Plan strictly, and also to make sure that we have guidelines and we continue to train healthcare workers on judicious and religious use of antibiotics, and also proper regulation of antibiotics in terms of who have access to antibiotics. For instance, in the UK, many high-income countries, you cannot easily get access to antibiotics because you need to have a prescription before you can have access to antibiotics. But we all know that that's not the case in Africa. And for instance, we know in Nigeria you can easily walk to chemist, open drug market, even in the market where someone is actually selling antibiotics. So all these things, we need a strong regulation on or regarding the use of antibiotics. So for instance, for Ebola now, we don't need antibiotics because it's a viral infection. And we also have other infections like that, like common cold, mostly caused by viruses. So we don't need antibiotics. So we need more awareness. We need to give people more proper education on the use of antibiotics, where they are indicated and where they are not indicated. People should be aware. There's a need for more social engagement, because I was discussing with so in a conference a few days ago that AML is a social problem. And we know major problem that we are facing now with antibiotics not working, antimicrobials not working in general, is due to misuse. One of the reasons, one of the leading causes, is the misuse of antibiotics. But at the same time, we cannot hoard antibiotics. People need to have access to antibiotics. But at the same time, we just need to engage them more to know what is happening to them, why they need antibiotics, and in most cases, why people abuse antibiotics or they just want to use the medication anyhow is due to poor knowledge and the fact that they don't have access to good healthcare. But all the approaches or all the way people actually respond to AMR is always telling people not to use antibiotics. For instance, if someone is not feeling well and they think antibiotics is going to help them, they're going to abuse antibiotics. So we need to bring people center and look at AMR from the social angle, rather than just looking at it from, oh, okay, this is the rule and we have to follow it. People are going through things. People that don't have access to healthcare, and they just see antibiotics, or they see go to one chemist and that person prescribe antibiotics to them, or just give and antibiotics over to them. They want to use the antibiotics. So I just think overall, what we need to do when it comes to response to or the use of antibiotics in conditions, not just Ebola, or even in future pandemic, we need strong science. We need strong infrastructure, especially in low and middle income countries where we have limited engagement and also responses that are not really equitable. We need all these things to come on board for us to be able to protect this life-saving medication.
Thank you so much, Dr. Davis. I totally agree with you. We need to strengthen our health systems and prepare for the next pandemic adequately. My next question for you, Dr. Davis. If you had to choose another title for this publication, what will you, without paraphrasing, I guess, if you would like to paraphrase it, if you had to choose another title for this publication, what will it be?
Well, just to keep it simple, the use of antibiotics in COVID-19 management, a rapid review, or I'll just give a case study of 10 African countries, just to keep it simple.
Interesting. I love that, in paraphrasing it and choosing that title, you brought out the main point, antibiotics, 10 African countries. You can say case study very well. Thank you so much for that. Many African countries don't believe in COVID-19. There is not many African countries, many Africans, I mean, don't believe in COVID-19, not just Africans, even people in the global north. There is already misuse and abuse of these antibiotics before the pandemic. And there is already lots of research on antimicrobial resistance. Do you believe the pandemic increased the resistance to these drugs, especially in Africa?
I would say during the pandemic, there's a lot of misuse. We have like people misusing antibiotics. That's the way documented, even in clinical setting. So possibly, because there's no hard fact to that, possibly is definitely going to contribute to increase in resistance, or we have resistance cases that we have. But overall, I tell people that bacteria or microorganisms in general, they are always looking for ways to survive. Even if you use antibiotics the right way, you use it properly as much as possible, they want to devise mechanism or ways to just survive, maybe block a particular channel or block a particular mechanism, and they just want to survive. So even if we use antibiotics the right way, they're always looking for ways to survive. So, but during the COVID-19 pandemic, based on our paper, we've seen that many African countries or even other countries around the world, there's an increase in the use of antibiotics. That's definitely what is going to happen, because even in high-income countries, where we have in the ICU, or where people are admitted to ICU, they will want to use antibiotics. There's no way. So, and COVID-19, the way we have the number of cases increasing daily, so we have more people that are in need of antibiotics for maybe superimposed bacterial infection with the viral, with COVID itself, and they just want to get the antibiotics. So the use itself. So that's why we want to really preserve antibiotics use as much as possible to people that actually need them, or that want to use antibiotics, that antibiotics are actually indicated for their ailments. So that's why we want to really protect it. But we know during COVID-19 pandemic, this is going to happen, because we have increased the number of cases and more people are going to receive antibiotics because of that. So I would say definitely COVID has contributed to increase the number of resistance pathogens. And of course, that's a major problem. But I think presently there's a lot of effort that is ongoing to strengthen antimicrobial stewardship and to raise awareness. I just think we need to intensify the approach and the mechanism and the strategy that we are using. And I was also discussing, yesterday, I was discussing with someone that all the data that we have presently when it comes to AMR, I would say is really like maybe an understatement of what's actually happening. There's major underreporting, because There are some communities that don't even have access to laboratory at all to even do any test to see whether they have resistance, bacteria infection or anything. So, but what we have presently shows that it is increasing. But I would say we even have more than what is currently reported, especially in Africa where we have weak laboratory systems. So we need to work on strengthening that so that we can better respond and also to give people proper education and also leverage on bottom up. Not just that someone from the top is making policy without understanding why people are actually misusing antibiotics. People are sharing or using misusing antibiotics because of their circumstances most of the time. And we all know that some people community lack access to water. Some people, they have a lot of misinformation regarding vaccination. Some community have lack access to clean water. Wash is a major problem. There's nothing that is ongoing regarding that. That means that they are prone to more infection, right? So at the end of the day, they are prone to more infection. So, but if you are just doing the awareness, so don't misuse antibiotics, that is not going to work. That's not going to be effective. We need to do a bottom-up approach, talk with people on the ground, what is the challenges, do more research to uncover all these things, and do proper implementation. And regarding the reason why people don't trust or don't believe that COVID actually exists, or maybe there's a pandemic or something like that, is the fact that there's a major distrust in governments right from the start. People don't believe anything government says. They just want to say, oh, they are lying to us, they are telling us sort of things, they want to reduce our population, all this, you know, all this normal stuff. So the distrust in governments and even in pharmaceutical companies in general skyrocketed. Because people just think, oh, these people just want to, they are here to get more money or try to create more problems. So, yeah, I think that's just it basically. And I think for me, I believe that it's actually assisted because, of course, I'm a scientist and I know, I've seen, and I understand that this is actually possible. And this is a pandemic that we are all facing. But what is important is we need to invest more in science literacy globally. That's very, very important. Yep.
Thank you so much, Dr. Davis. I totally agree with you that in the pandemic, there was increased use of antibiotics, and with increased use of antibiotics, we have increased cases of misuse and abuse of antibiotics. There is so much online and physical advocacy and education on antimicrobial resistance. In 2019, the WHO also identified AMR as one of the major threats facing healthcare systems. Why do you and other authors on this publication feel that AMR as a pandemic is hidden?
Is what?
Is hidden. Hidden, okay. Hidden. Why do you feel AMR as a pandemic is hidden? Why do you and other authors feel it's hidden as a pandemic?
Well, it's an hidden pandemic because most of the time it's happening. The fact that we have weak laboratory system in many African countries, people are not testing enough, people are not screening enough, there's limited microbiology culture. So we don't really have good data to say indeed this is actually happening. But the recent estimate in 2019, there's a recent Lancet paper that was published in 2022, but it was based on 2019 data. We're able to show, the authors are able to show through the Global Action AMR Research GRAM study, they're able to show that in Africa, we have more than 1 million deaths in 2019 that was attributed to AMR. And we also have globally, about 4.95 million that is actually attributable or associated with AMR. And that is combined HIV, tuberculosis, malaria. So, but the fact that we have limited diagnostic capacity, we have limited people actually testing, or people even going to healthcare system. In some African countries or in some rural areas, we have people going to for minor ailments, they will go to maybe all these local herbs. Probably might get better, but we don't actually know this. We can miss those kind of cases. So, and we also have weak surveillance, and that's a major thing, because if there's weak surveillance, there's no way to know. But there are a lot of effort that is ongoing by various researchers trying to estimate. But overall, we need to improve the data reporting system so that we can actually get a full scope. But at our present, it's already happening. If you go to intensive care unit, we see that some patients, of course, when they do the screening, there's only a few antibiotics that will be effective against what they are. In fact, some people, all the strong antibiotics, if I'm to use that word, all the third or fourth generation that we reserve for major or serious illness, some of them, they've stopped working for certain conditions. They might not be effective in some patients because of resistance cases. So this is being reported, or this is already happening, but we need to strengthen how we report this number of cases. There's a need for a kind of connection or a form of structuring or a form of reporting center, if we can have something like that. For instance, now, if I'm working in a lab, there's you know, coordinated effort to share the data. So you just keep the data, or just put it down. Oh, okay, they've done the culture, amoxicillin resistance, ciprofloxacin resistance, ampicillin, there's a resistance case. But there's no one reporting. There's no strong system, or there's no connection between different laboratories to report these cases. So we don't really know how large it is, but it's already is happening. Like if you go to any hospital today, you will see people, you see some cases where we actually have antimicrobials not working for what they have been used for many years, and they are always effective. Sometimes they have to combine, sometimes they have to use generation, maybe fourth or third generation of antibiotics or antimicrobials to actually treat that particular condition. So it's already happening, but it's silent because of that weak surveillance system and the laboratory testing capacity that is weak, especially in low and middle income countries.
Thank you so much for defending your statement on why you and other authors feel AMR is in the pandemic. Also in your words in the publication, you said many African countries are also yet to align with the international efforts to fight the increasing antibiotic resistance, in that only 7 African countries have developed the National Action Plan on Antimicrobial Resistance. Dr. Adebisi, we are strengthening antimicrobial stewardship programs on the continent without a national action plan. But we have national treatment guidelines for antibiotics use in COVID-19, which was just erased as a public health emergency of international concern recently. I want to use the word on seriousness. I don't want to use the word on seriousness, I mean. What do you have to say about this? Because statistics is important. Just 7 on the continent.
Actually, that was then. But presently, I think most countries now in Africa as well, they've developed a national action plan. But some of them, they've not implemented it. Because presently, I'm working on a project funded by Robert Couch Institute. And what we are doing, or we've even completed the project, is to review national action plan across ECOWAS countries in ECOWAS, West African countries, basically, just to look at their national action plan. So what happened presently as we speak is the fact that many of these countries now, they now have national action plan, but the implementation is still not there yet. So they have the national action plan. Some of them have started the implementation, while some of them have not. So when we wrote that paper, we only have 7 that is actually, they are doing serious work to make sure they implement, and they already have the plan drafted. So the origin of the National Action Plan itself was from WHO in 2015. WHO urged countries or developed the first National Action Plan that countries should adapt or should modify to their own local reality or local context for them to be able to respond adequately to AMR. So based on our recent research, we have been able to, we saw that many of these countries now, they have national action plans in place, many African countries, but the implementation is still underway for many. In fact, Nigeria now has the second one. Nigeria developed the first one in 2017 to 2024. Now we have another one from 2024 now to 2029 or 20, another year, 2028. So some countries now even have two presently as we speak, two national action plan. But it's not about national action plan, it's about the implementation. One of the things that we also found out in our study is the fact that there's limited investment in terms of money pumped into the project. And the key thing, and the reason why we were funded for that particular project by Robert Couch Institute, which I'm the principal investigator on that particular project, is to see how West African countries are engaging with vulnerable and marginalized population in their response. Let me give you an example. Someone living with disability, and probably they cannot hear, or they are ahead of hearing, and they cannot hear what people are saying. And you are saying, you are giving awareness, or you are doing similar things that you are doing for general population to someone with living with disability. It's always going to be difficult for them to engage with the message. So what we did basically is to look at the National Action Plan and how they engage vulnerable population like homeless people, elderly, children, pregnant women, seasonal worker, migrants, different marginalized population, people living with chronic conditions, people living in slums, refugees, displaced people. So we are looking at those group of population and how the National Action Plan has engaged them in the response. But what we found is that it's actually highly, highly limited. The current response is one size fits all, just respond. So we are working on getting that findings published, and at the same time to engage with African CDC and WHO as well on how best we can make sure that the action plan, national action plan for AMR, is all inclusive across all countries. Yeah. That's basically what is happening presently. So it's about the implementation, and it's very, very important that we invest more on how we respond to AMR, because AMR is a major problem. It's a major global public health threat, and it's already killing people, more than 1 million people now in Africa, and globally about 4.95 million have been estimated to actually die, or we have the condition be attributed or to AMR. Yeah.
Well noted, Dr. Adebisi. We agree that on the continent, in as much as funding is an issue, implementation is also an issue. Do you have a closing statement for our listeners and our watchers?
Antibiotics resistance, antimicrobial resistance is a global public health threat. And one key thing that is very, very important is that we need to respond, and we need to start the response now. There's a need for more investment, the need for more research, especially in this setting in Global South. We need more research, we need more investment, we need to strengthen the laboratory system as much as possible, and of course for us to prevent misuse of antibiotics in future pandemic, of course, if that is caused by virus again, which most likely people are saying is most likely to come from caused by virus. So we need to try as much as possible to prepare now, to strengthen the healthcare system, to invest more in research, and also not to forget the marginalized, the vulnerable population in our community, in our setting. Whenever we are responding or raising awareness about AMR, everyone needs to be engaged. Everyone, we need to work with everyone. We need to make sure that the awareness is there. And we also need to strengthen the drug regulatory system. That's very, very important. People can buy fake antibiotics, counterfeit antibiotics. So all these things are already happening. We need more effort. We need limited talks and more action from relevant stakeholder. AMR is a major threat. In fact, it's no longer a threat. It's a major problem. It's already happening. People are already reporting cases, and we have to try as much as possible to prepare and respond adequately, strengthen antimicrobial stewardship, engage with healthcare workers, improve their knowledge and skills, start from the grassroots, understand the social dimension of AMR, and of course, we'll be able to respond adequately and save and protect this life-saving medication. And I used to say, we are just buying time. we are buying time with our response until we have a way out of how best we can actually curb the issue of antimicrobial resistance. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much, Dr. Adebisi, for sharing your expertise with us. It's really an honor to have you on Dr. Fatembola's opinion. Dear audience, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Dr. Fatembola's opinion on the publication, the use of antibiotics in COVID-19 had about 1 million, if not more than 1 million views on the paper. So if you've not read the publication, please do read the publication, discuss with your colleagues, and also share this episode with your colleagues, discuss, and we hope, I'm optimistic, that it will impact not just you, but also communities globally.